we've got the carbon thing mixed up, and what we're doing is now people are realizing and farmers are realizing that, and we have even local people who are organizing internationally, things like this happening. So there's a lot of learning and teaching going on. And that gives me hope for sure. And just knowing how wonderful it is when people can be themselves and be able to teach as well as listen and have leaders who know what's going on. It's a big deal.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to The 5-H Show, and the 5-H's stand for health, happiness, harmony, humor, and humanity. And my name is Amy, and today's episode of The 5-H Show, we are going on a field trip to visit a lovely woman named Louise Turner. And Louise Turner lives just over the border from Vermont, right in New Hampshire, just right over the Connecticut River. And I sat at her kitchen table and we discussed all sorts of things, mainly her love of agriculture and food and healthy food and connecting people with that healthy food, that locally grown food that is so nourishing to the body. And that's appropriate because I met Louise Weston A. Price potluck gathering a few months ago, and we were just having such a lovely discussion about all of her insights from her experience from seeing all of these changes in our agricultural design in our country. Things including chemicals, the widespread use of chemicals, trucking food from far distances, and lots of other things. She's also worked in the schools and other places as an occupational therapist. So she really understands the body, mind, spiritual health of the people around her. And she's been an active participant all her life in helping people achieve greater health. And I think it seems like what she's most proud of is her work with the Weston A. Price Foundation as a chapter leader, one of the first chapter leaders ever, part of a small group of chapter leaders in New England who got the whole ball rolling. And so we are really honored today to have Louise Turner on the show at her kitchen table. So let's get going. We're going on a field trip. Thanks for joining me today. Welcome, everybody. I'm sitting here at the table with Louise Turner, and I'm really excited to introduce her to everybody. She was an occupational therapist in the schools for 42 years. She was a Weston A. Price chapter leader, one of only 13 chapters that started up when they first began having chapters. Now there are over 400 chapters internationally, so she was on the cutting edge of that. And she did that for 22 years. And all of her life, she's been involved in allied health field. And she's been able to observe a lot of changes that have been happening with our food, with our children, with our health. And she's very concerned and knowledgeable and joyfully willing to share everything that she's learned with us. And so we're sitting here at her kitchen table today. How are you doing, Louise?
I'm doing well, eager to talk and share and what I've learned through all these years of my life.
Yeah, this is an honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so where should we begin? Where were you born, maybe?
Oh, well, I was born at Mary Fletcher Hospital in Burlington. So right close by here. And when I was growing up, my father was a minister, so we moved every 5 years. So I've been in lived in seven states and been in all but seven. So I've seen the countryside and seen what happens in different areas of our U.S. map.
Mm-hmm. Different areas in a span of time, too.
Yes, yes. So when I was young, different things would occur that now I understand a little better how we came to be what we are now in terms of our agriculture and our food. So when I was a little girl in Vermont, my father would take me out to some of the farms and be with the cows and with the kids that were part of their family, and just learning so much about what that was. And then understanding the crops that were grown in different areas. So Vermont had apples and lots of other stuff too, of course, but apples is a big one, or was then, and actually still is. And then dairy, of course. So then we moved to Ohio, and in thinking back there, I didn't remember too much about gardens except people's small gardens. It was more the truckers. It was a trucking company, and this was a small town near Cleveland. And so we heard stories about what happened on the trucking route and all of this kind of stuff, and how our food is shipped from all over the place. And then we moved to Nebraska. No, excuse me, that comes later. We moved to Washington State, and our family in the middle of winter drove all the way out there to start the work.
And when you say your family, who was in your family? Siblings or?
Yes, I had two brothers younger than me. One younger by 3 years, the other by 7 years. And then my father and mom. And we have a big family spread out all over the place. We had to drive cross country to see our relatives sometimes, which happened in the summertime when we had a month of vacation. It's pretty good. So anyway, we arrived in Washington State, and I started seeing the negative industrial stuff going on that is affecting us still to this day. And that was the Atomic Energy Commission site in the Tri-City area, which included Richland, where I lived. And it meant climbing under the table when there was a siren running, and actually exiting the town into the desert around it. So we had those typically more than once a year. The sirens would go and everybody would be on the road. So that was an influential thing. And DDT, oh yes, that got sprayed. And then the kids in some families were allowed to run behind the truck. So you've got these fumes going on. So the toxicity of what was happening to food and to all of us was beginning to happen then, and actually came out of World War II. The chemical structure. Lives are better with chemicals, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there were ads like that. And then we moved to California, and that was when Big Ag was starting huge rows and rows of fruit, vegetables, but spraying with airplanes. So that's the first that came about that I noticed. And just being out in the orchards and then you hear the planes going, is you're right there. And you don't have to be very far away to have that as a problem that can cause medical problems. And then Nebraska. And of course, the Midwest is where all the feedlots are, CAFOs. So I saw that. You had ranchers and farmers, and there was competition for land use. So there were cattle ranchers as well as farmers. So that was happening. And then I moved to Boston, got my OT degree, stuck it out there for almost 30 years. And what was happening there was Weston A. Price was starting to do its work with chapter leaders, and I became a chapter leader. And what was happening then was people were getting food through different farmers and coming to a place where they delivered it to people coming with their cars to pick their load up. And so that was how raw milk was usable at that point. And getting pastured animals was the other thing. And back then, as a chapter leader, I was doing a lot of phone calling, getting responses from people by phone because the internet wasn't active and going at that point. So I enjoyed that part of it. I like to be able to chat with people and see what they're up to and find out what their needs are and give them referrals to things. So that was a fun part. And then what started happening was I was getting phone calls from future chapter leaders who were coming into Boston. So it wasn't just me anymore. And things burgeoned and burgeoned, and then my need to be in a new place came, and I moved up here in 2004. So the chapter leader function up here got me involved with farmers and permaculture people, finding farms, sharing where those farms are with a food list, being able to start educating people about preparing food, sauerkraut, yogurt, kefir, stock, all those nutritious foods that Weston A. Price tells us about. It's a real thing. So that's been fun. I retired a couple years ago, so I'm still very active in keeping my voice heard and staying involved, because there's a lot of things that are exciting right now. The regenerative agriculture movement is taking off, and I'm observing what's happening with ranchers and farmers in the Midwest particularly, but not just the Midwest, are deciding for themselves and teaching each other what they can do to change the soil and get rid of the dust that's starting to happen, even worse than the Dust Bowl, because we have desertification in many parts of the world, that the soil has lost its power to bring food back. And there's a need for having a way to produce food that's safe, nutritious, because it's got soil that's got some bacteria and bugs and all sorts of things in there that help provide the soil with the nutrients, as well as the evacuated stool getting that into the ground and bringing the carbon back into the ground again and not being upset by cow farts, if I can say that.
You can.
We've got the carbon thing mixed up, and what we're doing is now people are realizing and farmers are realizing that, and we have even local people who are organizing internationally, things like this happening. So there's a lot of learning and teaching going on. And that gives me hope for sure. And just knowing how wonderful it is when people can be themselves and be able to teach as well as listen and have leaders who know what's going on. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
A very big deal.
Being able to communicate. I know that was on our list of things that we were going to talk about, you know, was, you know, having, how can we disagree but still talk?
Yes.
And learn from each other.
Well, I think that has been part of the problem is we have the COVID situation and lack of knowledge, but also a breakdown in social relationships. And now we're trying to figure out through churches, through organizations, how to begin to get back to being able to share and talk without feeling threatened or upset or frightened by the whole process. And the safety for being able to do that takes some work. I think because fear has been such an ominous part of this whole COVID process, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I think, I guess if I can say that being in circle, I've learned that in many different venues, can enable safety to happen. To know that if you're in a circle of people and literally physically in a circle where the person who is speaking is being heard by the remaining people, and each person has a right and a way to communicate when their time comes up. And for me, that's been extremely important, to just be able to openly share the fears, the upset, what's happened, and to make sense of what can happen and what is happening, to understand that. Because often we just don't know.
We certainly don't know in isolation.
Yes, that's right. Yes. And feeling isolated, I think, has weakened our ability to speak up. Mm-hmm. And then once we learn something, to be able to share it. So I feel honored to be able to share my story.
Yeah. So food is a big part of it.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and then if we walk into a grocery store, there's not a whole lot that's healthy there. And I think more and more people are turning to making it themselves. The next step is starting to make sauerkraut or purchasing the sauerkraut that happens to be in the refrigerator section, not the shelving, because that sauerkraut has been pasteurized. We need to be with all those little bugs is part of the process here. It's not an alien thing anymore. We're understanding much more the nutritional biome in our guts and how important it is to have a balance there. And when we eat the foods that are in the grocery store, that isn't always able to happen. And more grocery stores are beginning to have an organic section. That's an important aspect. And then people have some choice. Mm-hmm. And then often people don't go organic because they just can't afford it. But by encouraging people to learn from each other, and we can get back to doing things as they're meant to be done.
Right.
And it makes a big difference.
And we're sitting here in New Hampshire, Piermont, New Hampshire, where you live.
Yes.
And you were describing some of the differences between being able to buy farm fresh food here in New Hampshire versus Vermont,
yes,
where I live. We have different rules.
Yeah, so Vermont is not able to sell raw milk other than at the farm and not in restaurants or grocery stores. In New Hampshire, fortunately, raw milk can be purchased at a farm, in a store, in a restaurant, which is really encouraging.
A restaurant? That's
yes.
Amazing. We can't even imagine that yet in Vermont. That's
right,
great.
Right. So a lot of good things are happening in New Hampshire that, you know, you've got farmers here who've been, one farmer here who's been intergenerational for 7 years and still putting out wonderful food. And over the years I've been here, his fully pastured when at first he was not, and now selling meat as well as eggs, milk, dairy, some really wonderful things. They can keep our health going. And it's so exciting for me to be in a little village where I can just pop over there and pick things up. That's, you know, we worry about the long distances of these trucks that carry our food nationwide. It's like, wow, let's bring much more to the small areas. And let's see what happens with that.
Let's see what happens. Yes, I love that. And you've had an opportunity to see over, you know, decades in different places what happens.
Yeah, I think it took me a while to realize, why do I have the views I do and where did they come from? And it was from all of those different places. And it was over a time span so that I could see the productivity systems that were in place in different parts that were pretty horrible. In other parts more recently. And knowing the history of all of that is an important thing. You know, we don't have a true history of what's happening to our food system. And to the point that I never knew this, but I had an uncle who was a transportation professor at Penn State. And I'm just thinking that this is where the influx of the large trucks came about. With little understanding or thought about what that would do to the future of cost of food, of rules in different states. So that's another piece of the transportation system that's broken down. And during COVID, we were losing access to some of our foods because of that breakdown. So just learning what it means to have local and to feel comfortable visiting the farmer that you're getting your foods from, that's an important piece. Mm-hmm. Because some people are almost thinking that this is true, that the large stuff is all there is, and basing decisions to become vegan or vegetarian from that, without understanding what is happening with small farms, giving us some choice in the matter. And then laws for meat processing, so that the terrible system we have now can no longer exist as it is. And there's much going on with the legal system regarding that now, too, which is an important part of the process of change that we want.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, if it was the laws that allowed it to get so centralized and monopolized, then we need to change.
Yes.
That as well.
Yeah, very definitely. But I think what gives me hope is just even local people who are helping with the regenerative agriculture movement, traveling internationally to do that, traveling to the Midwest, where a lot of the agricultural system is broken down, is all those corn and soybeans that are taking up space, and then the cows can't digest it well, so they're given antibiotics. And it's not healthy meat anymore. So just knowing that even if not certified organic, there are lots and lots of farmers in this area who are doing no pesticides. They're doing all natural, but it's just that they can't afford to pay the organic fees. So hopefully that can change to the point where there's not this division going on. Small farm, large farm kind of thing. But I think as people become more confident in working together, because that is what's happening, is they're learning from each other, and they're learning from what started as organic, and now we've got a second movement going on to improve the quality of organic. it's a lot of change, but it's time for hope to keep us going with this process. Very important.
You are listening to The 5-H Show, and my name is Amy, and this is an interview with Louise Turner. We are sitting at Louise's kitchen table and discussing her love of life and people and food and animals and the land. Thank you for joining us.
Can you explain where Weston A. Price discovered his, farming practices? And
sure.
Where did that come from?
Well, Weston A. Price was a dentist in the state of Ohio. And he began wondering why it was so many of his patients had cavities and broken down health because of that. So he and his wife visited 12 different countries that had people that lived away from the commercial white flour, white sugar food to homegrown different cultures had different foods. In Switzerland, it was raw milk and cheese and bread. But bread that was high quality. And then he visited lots of other countries, including Alaska. Some of the Hebrides Islands around England. Polynesia. So other islands. Having a little trouble remembering all the different places that he worked. But they traveled and then they had people show their teeth. And so in his book, there are lots of pictures of people showing what happens in malnourished diets with a breakdown in the bone growth and all of that. Just that their health was destroyed by not eating those natural foods that further away into the mountains or away from the commercial white flour, white sugar situation. So that book came out and people began listening because this was sort of information that dentists didn't cover usually. And I think the organization itself, the Price-Pottinger organization, was one of the first that recognized this work. And then Sally Fallon Morrell came into the picture wanting not just to educate, but to bring it out into the public eye. So in early 1990s, she organized the Weston A. Price Foundation and began teaching people about having chapter leaders, which was how I came into the picture. And the chapter leaders would then gather information about farms and what they would recommend and just helping people understand what kinds of foods and how to prepare them. And that growth is continuing to happen with local chapters and more and more local chapters because the word is getting out. So I'm just thinking all these things that are happening right now are really starting to be there.
Right. Well, we're starting to see the effects That's on right. our health and things, and yeah. people are waking up.
That's right. So it's very exciting just to see that happening.
Yeah. So why is it important to have animal proteins and fats in our diet, not just vegetables and fruit?
Well, because we've got some of our vitamins, vitamin A, D, K, specifically that we need foods, organ meats, so liver, kidney, heart. And finding places that sell that takes a little effort, but it's starting to happen that people are putting that up for sale. So we need fats in our diet for sure to help. And actually, the fats help transport the minerals from the vegetables into the cells. So that when we're not eating enough or good quality fats, we're missing out on our nutrition status, for sure.
And when you say good quality fats, what are some examples of that? You don't mean like deep frying fats, of
no,
course.
No, that's right.
That's not good quality.
Well, butter is a really good one. Mm-hmm. And being sure that it's not a spread, which has got other things in it that aren't as healthy. Then you've got animal fats. So you've got pork fat, lard, tallow, which is beef fat, chicken fat, which is schmaltz.
Schmaltz, oh, yeah. I've heard of that.
Yeah. And then coconut oil. And not to go anywhere near
like vegetable oils?
Yeah, all the vegetable oils. I'm trying to remember the one that is the worst of all.
Oh.
So anyway, understanding that the role of the vegetable oils came into being in the early 1900s and was a falsehood about what was healthy, and has affected the entire stuff in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. So anything that was packaged or in a jar is something to be wary of, and all the more reason to have food and to understand what real food is. It is not all the canned goods and things like that in the grocery store. It's actual produce, it's actual animal beings. And just an understanding of a connection with those animal beings is different. That if you look at the Native American way of being with animals, they were killing bison during that period of time in the plains, but they were blessing that animal for what they provided, and they were using all parts of that animal to sustain their health. Mm. So they knew when excess was there and didn't do that. So there's so much about what we choose to eat and how we prepare it that's so important. And part of it is just finding what is true for themselves, but also to be well educated about that truth. And maybe this is one of the topics that can come out of the sharing. Mm-hmm. Because so much of the division now about food is about what's good for us and what is good for us.
Right.
Understanding what is good for us and what is good for the animal.
Right. Yeah. And it starts with the soil and the care of the animal and
yes.
What chemicals were not used. And
that's right.
There's so many layers. Yeah. It can get really confusing if people just stop, look at one surface piece of it and don't look underneath.
Yes, I think that's true. So I think just that's where listening to each other can come in handy. We need to be able to look at that a little more carefully than we have. And just having the respect for each other despite our disagreements, that somehow each of us carries something in us about what needs to be there. So there is a movie being shown, kiss the ground. And it happens to be coming locally at the Lowe Auditorium in Lebanon, or Hanover, actually, and a couple of different places that are doing that same thing. And I think the types of movies that are being shown now is we're hopefully getting past the complete division that's going on. There's some beginning understanding of what's true or not, which I think I'm hoping is going to keep growing. And getting involved with this whole process is part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, truth should bring us together.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so all of this food stuff has sort of been a side project of yours, right? Because your occupation was as an occupational therapist.
Well, and then that had its downsides too, of course. I began wondering why I was in the profession for so long and tried to figure out other ways of doing it, because some of my colleagues would do holistic OT. Not very many, though. We were taught in school that we were holistic, physical, emotional, all of those things. But what happened was the medical system got split into physical and psychiatric. And we still have that body-mind distinct cutoff there. So I think for me, I began realizing I was here. My purpose was to see what actually was going on and make some sense of what was happening, which greatly influenced me relating to becoming a nutritional therapy practitioner more recently. But even that isn't exactly what I want to do, because what I want to do is keep connected and get the story out and help that to happen in various ways. I think in my OT career, I began doing relaxation training and incorporating breathing. Not really hearing the whole story about that, however. So I then also witnessed during my time from 2004 to the present day that I was working, well, until a couple years ago when I retired. Well, it was more about why was I an OT for all that time? And just knowing what I know now from my experience, I realize that's the story that needs to be told. And people forget.
Yeah.
You know, they don't remember. And there's a lot of all this I'm realizing now, how multifaceted my upbringing has been and how important it is to have a place and a willingness to share that knowledge and help this movement keep on going.
Yeah, help people. Yeah. Is that what got you into OT? Was you wanted to help folks?
It was more, interestingly, crafts, arts and crafts, because OT is very much not there too much. That's the psychiatric one where you color your coloring books and all that kind of thing. So it's just that our whole medical system is broken and we we need to work on that too. That's part of the picture here. In the total lack of education doctors are receiving about food and diet and nutrition is missing. Mm-hmm. And they're struggling to figure out what the heck to do. So everybody's trying to figure the things out, but perhaps that person that can help them with that. Well, I talk about this sometimes with some of my doctors. Mm-hmm. It's very important. Some of them are quite interested. Oh, I never thought of that. But that's another piece of the picture. You know, when I go to Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center, it's like a city in there. And it can feel not very warm and cozy. But I try to bring some of my realities into voice when I see them, because I think that's the piece that's missing, is they don't know where to look for it.
Right.
They have no idea where to look for it. And they need some voices that are telling them a little differently. And hopefully that can contribute. I was told by a physician that it was going to take the generation of doctors in psychiatry to be finished with their role in order for the new to come. And that was hugely important. I had to say to him that this is what's happening for me. And how can we change that? Mm-hmm. So there are some definite, there's some awareness there that something's wrong, which is not the ability to describe what that is and think differently. Yeah. So we're really ahead of the game in our food situation. And that links us with doctors in some way and needs to change in certain ways. That's our medical care system is out of whack.
Yeah.
Because we want to know how to better care, how to have better health care. The pieces are beginning to show themselves. And the other part is that the physicians, in terms of our healthcare system being so broken, are really struggling to figure out what's happening. And one particular physician said to me that the only way that psychiatry can move on to a better approach is going to be after the current educators are gone. And it's the educative system that's awry in a huge way in terms of nutrition, in terms of toxic environment and what that means. Toxic environment isn't just about a chemical thing that happened in a work site. It's about chronic toxicity. And that's where the vaccines have taken a huge role in terms of some of those materials being in the vaccines itself and the combination of such into a varying population. So it's a process here. And when I see some of my practitioners, I bring up some of these topics, and some of them are quite interested. They need some input too, and I think they're suffering as a profession in a big way. So we've got a lot of good things happening.
There are. Yeah. Yeah, and figuring out even what animals need, right, yes, to be healthy. Yeah. I think we were talking about the stomping and the... Could you explain that again?
Oh, okay, yes. The mobbing or herding of cattle happens with particular species, so cows certainly being one, sheep being another, bison being another. They mob when a predator comes, but the modern version for cows is electric fences to keep them out of one area and move them into a new area. And so they start eating the grass, and it leaves the other pastured sites some time to grow back grass. So they're in the range of eating new grass, and then they move on to the next one. And the pounding of their hoofs puts the carbon, through defecation, puts the carbon back in the soil. It's not as simple as the carbon going out with the pollutants. This is the other part of the process. So it's a matter of knowing the proper sizes or duration of the process that's in the issue. But we've got worldwide leaders here who are experiencing working in desertification sites, which is a huge part of the land use that's happening now in the world. So that's what was happening with the bison when the bison got killed back in the 1800s. You know, it was...
They stopped caring for the soil.
That's right, and then the prairies went away, but now there's definite efforts to get those prairies working again. And it's about understanding the whole process and not just cow farts being considered. Let's look at the bigger picture here.
Yeah, and no one-size-fits-all formula will work for every hillside or every pasture or every group of animals.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think the first thing you did, one of the first things you did when I came to visit you today, was you showed me what was in your refrigerator.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so we could walk over there together and look at what you do with the farm produce when you bring it into your home.
Okay, so the first shelf is fermented products. So we've got sauerkraut, carrot and ginger, daikon. This is a product that's at the store, and the root, I love it, is they live on Route 5 in Vermont. So they call themselves Route 5 Farm.
Great.
And then there's red cabbage sauerkraut and then regular sauerkraut. So that's my top shelf. Now's the dairy. So this is kefir. This is yogurt. That's yogurt. The rest of these are kefir that I made from a gallon of milk.
And what is kefir?
Well, it's another product like yogurt that's got lots of good bacteria in it. So it's very helpful for the gut flora. And then eggs. And eggs are extremely important. All the good nutrients are in eggs. So I can get these from farmers right around here.
Excellent.
And then the vegetables. And that's only part of them.
Oh, wow. Green and red and orange.
Olivia's Organic Spring Mix.
Oh, and what's in that bowl?
That's beef stew.
Oh. Your secret special, huh?
Yep. Okay, now over here are fats.
Ah.
So let's see. That's bacon fat.
So what would you use that for?
Frying things. Mm-hmm. And it's the quality of the fats about frying that's the issue. Well, that's mustard. That's schmaltz, which is chicken fat.
Oh, I remember my grandmother saying that.
Yeah. And then duck fat.
Ah.
And this is lard.
Now, do you make that yourself?
I got that from this farm.
Oh, great.
But yes, I have made it myself. I've gotten the lard. Well, I'll show you what it looks like. I've got a frozen thing that I haven't done yet. So that's lard, and it has to be sliced into cubes, and then it melts over hours. And then you end up with cracklins, which are the little chewy things at the end. Okay. And the rest of it's fat.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So it's, you know, we've just forgotten these old ways of eating.
Yeah, cracklings were like a delicacy, weren't they? People would fight over them.
Well, and we had this farmer kid who came in fifth grade. He brought cracklings in for everybody to eat.
When you were a kid?
Yes.
Wonderful.
In fifth grade,
what'd you think?
I loved them. I thought that was delicious.
Oh, fantastic. Remember in your fifth grade nutrition lessons.
That's right.
That's a good memory. Oh, well, thank you, Louise. This has been a wonderful afternoon.
You're welcome.
At your kitchen
I enjoyed
table.
This great deal. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. And happy spring, and let's stay in touch.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I always ask, let me give you a minute too. Is there anything else? Anything we didn't cover, anything else on your mind? I always give people another minute or two because sometimes in the rush of it all, we forget something.
Well, we covered quite a bit, lots of groundwork. Yeah, I think I've pretty much said what I need to today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of good messages for the future. And you're right, we're heading to a beautiful future. I can see it.
Yeah, I think so.
Thanks to all the hard work people like you have been doing all these years to lay the foundation and gather the information we need.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you for your dedication to people and health.
You're welcome.
Who put that burger on your plate, girls and boys? Who put that burger on your plate? Who brought you the burger, Mother Nature and the workers? That's who put the burger on your plate, girls and boys. That's who put the burger on your plate. Who put the bun on the burger on your plate, girls and boys? Who put the bun on the burger on your plate? Who put the bun upon your burger, Mother Nature and the workers, and the reapers and the threshers, and the seedlings and the raindrops, and the bakers and the truckers? That's who put the bun and the burger on your plate, girls and boys. That's who put the bun and the burger on your plate. Who put the patty and the bun and the burger on your plate, girls and boys? Who put the patty and the bun and the burger on your plate?